I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about higher education. We'll discuss the roles colleges and universities do and should play in a rapidly changing world and economy. We'll talk about the pressures, financial, cultural, and political, that colleges and universities have to deal with. And we'll explore the opportunity before institutions of higher learning. My guests are Purdue University President and former Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels and Franklin College President Thomas Miner. To join the conversation, please call 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about the challenges facing higher education in Indiana. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, I have a distinguished panel of guests here today, starting with former governor and current Purdue University President Mitch Daniels, new Franklin College President Thomas Miner, and Indiana Commissioner of Higher Education Teresa Lubbers. Welcome, all of you. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
So we probably ought to start the conversation by giving an overview. You know, right now, higher ed is facing some of the same challenges that every level of education up to. Is there voices calling for reform, arguing about, where institutions of higher learning are in terms of being responsive to both economic and social changes? And everybody in this room has had to negotiate those currents. Could we start a little bit with maybe just a brief take on where we think higher ed is right now, how well it is positioned here in this state? And I'm going to start with the one who's got the responsibility for the overview, the Commissioner of Higher Ed, Teresa Lubbers.
Well, I mentioned in our State of Higher Education address last year that if we were giving Indiana a grade right now, I would give us an incomplete. We clearly are at the forefront of much innovation in higher education, on multiple fronts, from funding of higher education to the expectations we've established for schools and students. But the thing that really matters is if those expectations return in results that matter as well. So I think we're making progress on many fronts, but I think we have much work to still be done.
President Daniels, I'm going to go with the courtesy titles all the way through here.
I think we've made a lot of progress. We know we're starting from a low base. The commissioner reminds us all the time about only 30-odd percent of Hoosiers have completed anything post-secondary, and that we need that to be much, much higher than that. We are blessed with a good starting point in the sense of a rich and disproportionate network of higher education institutions, including some fabulous private schools like Franklin. So I'm an optimist. A lot of the problems we're facing, quite honestly, and you just referenced this, stem from a K-12 system that's not producing enough kids who are ready for school. So that's a whole other subject. But those that are ready, I think, have a great menu of choices. And I think, by and large, our universities are performing well and preparing them for life.
President Miner, you come to Indiana with fresh eyes, obviously, because you've been on the job at Franklin for 7 months now, right?
Right.
So what have your observations been about the state of higher ed here in Indiana?
It's remarkable how right on the commissioner is in having to give us an incomplete, even though this state is so rich with higher ed resources. Sort of remarkable public system and great institutions that are doing great things, and 31 privates All of these institutions are innovative. And while we're all impactful, at some level we have to look at the macro statistics and say that we're underperforming. And I think that's sad. It's a great opportunity, though, for us. It's such a wonderful opportunity for us to collaborate in the spirit of Frank Sparks and Herman Wells, who came together in the middle of the 20th century to bring the publics and privates together to create more collaboration in higher education.
And there, the numbers do suggest that we are underperforming. I mean, if you look at a lot of the national categories here, associate degree or higher, we're 45th in the nation. Certificate awarded, that's less than baccalaureate, we're 32nd. We're 21st, I guess, among all degrees and certificates. What accounts for that? I'd like everybody's thoughts on this. I mean, how did we get to this point? I think what I'm hearing here is broad agreement that we got a lot of work to do. How do we get to the point, though, that we have to dig out?
I'll say one thing that it doesn't account for it is money.
Mm-hmm.
Support, public support for higher education in Indiana, I believe, is extraordinary. Our savings plan is one of the most generous in the country. Mm-hmm. The amount of public funds available for student support and scholarships and so forth, one of the most generous anywhere. And I noticed in the recent downturn, Indiana was third in the country in maintaining support for public education as state revenues fell everywhere. So we can always do with more, but that's not the issue. I think part of it, John, is that as the most manufacturing-intensive state in the country, we still live with the residue of an era where you didn't need a college degree mm-hmm. as often in Indiana,
mm-hmm.
where large numbers – big percentages of our jobs could be handled very competently by someone with the right work ethic and certain maybe manual skills. And I think that's probably why we start so far behind and have so far to go.
Well, obviously, Mitch is absolutely right. I mean, if you look at the culture of our state and the expectations to be able to enter the middle class, you did not need a high level of education. So what we're about doing is changing a culture of a state to make sure that Hoosiers understand that the 21st century requires some sort of education and training beyond high school. That's a heavy lift, but we are making some progress. We've slightly increased our attainment level. We rank 38th in the nation now in the number of Hoosiers who have some sort of credential beyond high school. And so we're trending in the right direction. We're just not moving far enough, fast enough.
My colleagues are right on, John, but I'd like to add one thing, which is I think we have to be very attentive to the college preparedness of our own high school graduates in the state. And that I do add as a newcomer. I think my biggest surprise coming to Indiana mm-hmm. has been the ill-preparedness of students coming out of our own high schools for college. And that's leading to rates of incompletion that are unacceptable.
Is that specifically an Indiana problem? Because I know the New York Times does the same story, it seems like, every year as the academic year is about to start, and says that an alarming number, generally between two-thirds and three-quarters of the students entering college, are unprepared for college-level work. And that's a national thing. Are our numbers even higher than that, or is there an Indiana perspective there? How much of this is an Indiana problem? How much of it is a national problem?
Our college-going rate is at the national level, so we have people who are going to college. It's a matter of whether they're really prepared when they get there. And our remediation numbers would show that we have far too many people who enter college needing remediation. We're doing a lot to try to address that by identifying students in high school earlier who are not on track to be ready. We're redesigning the way we deliver remediation. Mm-hmm. We've essentially said if you need remediation, you have to start at the community college. You can't start at a four-year mm-hmm. institution. So we're doing a lot to wrap our arms around those students. But I think what you'll clearly see is the basis of this achievement gap that then continues. As you see, some students in high school very well prepared, but the disparity between some and others is very marked.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about changes facing higher education in Indiana. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. We had Jamie Marisotis from the Lumina Foundation on the program a few weeks ago. He's got a new book out that's very provocative. And, you know, at some level, one of the things he was arguing is that the model for higher ed almost needed to be torn down and reshaped, that instead of being focused on inputs, we need to be focused on outcomes, and that instead of saying, okay, you're going to do this 3-hour course or this 6-hour course, we're going to say this is the standard of competency and you take as long as you need to get to that level of competency. If you do it in an hour, that's fine. If you do it in 10 hours, that's fine. But this is how we approach that. Is the model, I'm taking it, is the model by which colleges and universities that they operate under still a valid one? I saw President Miner shaking his head minutely there, so I'm going to go with him first, but I suspect everybody's going to want a piece of that one.
I like our model mm-hmm. because I think we bring our students a remarkable amount of maturity and intellectual advancement in the time they spend in our classrooms, thanks to people like you, John, and thanks to communities that push them, that challenge them at a critical age in their lifetimes. I don't think there's a replacement for that. Competency-based forms are certainly getting a lot of attention and are popular. But the best example that I've got of that concerns me a lot, and it's the College Board's Advanced Placement, the AP system. So we have students who are coming in with AP credit from high school, supposedly college credit, who are no more ready in those fields for college work than they were earlier in their high school experiences. So the raw data that I've got on competency-based troubles me.
Mm-hmm. President Daniels.
I think the current model with modifications will be and probably will be fine for a large number of students in the future. So Jamie's terrific. I wouldn't go with torn down, but I would go with whatever the second formulation was that he mentioned. Now,
those were my words, and I should not his. I was trying to paraphrase.
But I think there's a lot of room and a lot of need for alternative modes, and we're already seeing them. Commissioner Lubbers never lets us forget that. First of all, the vast majority of the biggest opportunity to raise our college completion rate here is not with 18 to 21 year olds; it's with the 750,000 Hoosiers who started something post-secondary and never finished it. It's an extraordinary number when you think about it. There are only 6.6 or 7 million of us, of whom many are minors. So, you know, 750,000 is a significant percentage of all our adult population.
By my math, that's at least 10%.
Oh, right? More.
Yeah.
for instance, we brought the nation's leading online educator, WGU, and private labeled it, so to speak, WGU Indiana here. It's competency-based. It's aimed at a very different population than the one President Miner's serving or in the main the one that Purdue is serving. And they're producing graduates now at a high rate, very much on a move-at-your-own-pace basis. One of our 10 colleges at Purdue is transforming itself to a competency-based model also. So it won't be for everybody. But where we can devise ways for students, whatever their age or interest, to move at their own rate. Many of them will move more quickly, and that means more affordably, and that means they're out in productive life more readily and sooner.
Okay. Commissioner Lubbers.
Well, one model does not fit all mm-hmm. because our students who enter the higher education arena now look so different. I mean, only maybe 20 to 25% of people ever live on a college campus these days. So that means that we have to look at different models, including competency models. The average age of a student at WGU Indiana is 37 or 38. And we are going after these students. We're trying to get them to come back and finish. We branded a campaign, You Can Go Back, and trying to provide incentives. Our colleges and universities, public and private, are working with us in that regard. But I think competency plays a major role in that for many populations, including veterans and older citizens and people who actually learn in different ways. So I think we have to be willing, and certainly at the Commission, we've embraced competency as one of the three sections in our new strategic plan. We don't know exactly what that means in all its facets, but it's important to look at it.
We've got just a little bit of time before we go to the first break. You say it's one of the three parts of your strategic plan. What are the other two?
The other two with our new plan are continuing completion, and the third is career alignment.
Okay. If you are just joining us, we are talking about challenges facing higher education here in Indiana. If you would like to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are former governor and current Purdue University president Mitch Daniels, Franklin College president Thomas Miner, and Indiana Commissioner of Higher Education Teresa Lubbers. I only work in radio. I ought to be able to talk. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about challenges facing higher education in Indiana. My guests are former governor and Purdue University president Mitch Daniels, new Franklin College president Thomas Miner, and Indiana Commissioner of Higher Education Teresa Lubbers. Probably should have said at the top of the program, I think it's fairly obvious, but in the interest of full disclosure, obviously, President Miner and I worked together at Franklin College. I should have done that disclosure at the top of the program. I was so eager to start talking about the subject that I forgot to get there. We've gotten an email from a listener named Marcia. If you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Marcia says, class of 2015 has the most student debt in U.S. history, as much as $35,000. And Alabama coach Nick Saban deserves to be college football's first member of the $10 million club. Please tell me how these two statements can exist simultaneously. I guess as the only person who's got to oversee a major college athletic program, we'll go with you, President Daniels, first.
Amen, Marcia. we're at Purdue, we compete with $8 million, I guess that's the current standard, coaches, but we don't pay that much. But the phenomenon's a real one and maybe a subject for a different day or another question. I'll concentrate on the first part, which is, I think, the even larger problem. Mm-hmm. And that is student debt. She's exactly right. The average is creeping up toward $35,000. Now, we've tried to move directly on it at Purdue University. We're in the third year of what will be at least a four-year freeze on tuition. Mm-hmm. We're trying to decide what goes beyond that, but our policy will remain one of restraint to the extent possible. We've also brought down the cost of room and board in 2 5% steps. So Purdue is, to our knowledge, the only university of its kind where it's less expensive to attend all in than it was 3 years ago.
What accounts for the financial pressures here? Because the cliche, obviously, is that there's been a reduction over time in state funding. But if, for example, and two of you would know this better than I would, Indiana throws what? If you count K through 12 and higher ed, well north of 60% of its budget.
That's
at
right.
Education.
It's the highest percentage in America, last time I checked, the highest percentage of the state budget. And as I mentioned earlier, Indiana, for a long time, has had one of the strongest programs of student support, scholarships, which are available, usable, by the way, at private mm-hmm. schools, not just public, and that's not the case everywhere. So I'll just say that student debt is down 20-some percent at Purdue over the last few mm-hmm. years. You can make progress here. That translates to something like $75 million less that our students are borrowing than they were just a few years ago. And it needs to be said that a student who borrows and finishes a degree, particularly a degree that clearly has marketplace value, has mm-hmm. made a wonderful investment. Mm-hmm. It's not that no one should ever borrow. Mm-hmm. We worry about the students who borrow a lot and either graduate with a degree of suspect quality, mm-hmm. Maybe from a school that's not as rigorous as Purdue, let's say. Or worse, the biggest problem are those who borrow and don't finish at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a huge amount of the student debt that's outstanding is. And those young people we really do worry about, and we ought to try to minimize their number.
Let me reframe the question here, because one of the arguments I've heard, particularly from financial advisors, folks like that, is that the whole student loan system ought to be restructured so that, for example, if you plan to go into one of the more lucrative areas of practicing medicine, you can borrow up to $500,000 or whatever. But if you plan to go into social work or something where you're not likely to be compensated at a high level, you shouldn't be able to borrow as much. That sort of runs against the grain of an egalitarian society. But on the other hand, it does deal with the problem of students who will be making somewhere in the mid $20,000 range in salaries coming out with $80,000 worth of debt and not ever being able to get out from under that. Commissioner Lubbers.
Well, there's another way to go at this, and I think that is to provide much better information to students and families about the implications of the decisions they make. So one of the things that we do at the Commission, I think one of our best value added would be the reports that we put out, including recently a return on investment report. So we show the benefit of higher education to the student and to the state, but then we campus by campus show what it costs, how much it costs after financial aid, and it's correct. We rank first in the Midwest and seventh in the nation in need-based financial aid, so that's significant when you look at the state's contribution to higher education. And then we follow not only, and then what are the major areas of study on a campus, what you could make 1, 5, and 10 years out in those areas. We don't tell people you shouldn't be a teacher or a social worker. We need those people. But you need to know the implications of how much money you borrow in light of how much you would make. We also are looking at this in creating what we think will be a first in the nation, Indiana College Value Index, when we'll incorporate the quantitative value of education beyond high school with the principles that were a part of the Gallup-Purdue Index. You know, what is it about your higher education experience that mattered in your life? And we're going to combine the two into a value index to really get at this issue of, is college worth it? I would say indisputably, yes. Can we make it more valuable and the investment wiser? Yes, we can.
President Minor, I'm going to take a slightly different tack for you, too. Where are the financial pressures the greatest for, an independent institution such as Franklin?
Well, I think it's not that dissimilar from the Purdue's of the world. It's got to do with high-need families. And at Franklin, for example, we're extraordinary in our work with Pell-eligible families. So those who are have the greatest economic need get good support from the college and from the various levels of government that are providing student support. But a third to 40% of our students are Pell eligible at a place like Franklin. In fact, while private institutions have a rep for being places of the rich, we actually enroll in Indiana in independent institutions more needy folk than the publics do. And that really says a lot to me about the values of our institutions and how hard we're working to keep them affordable. And I would go to Commissioner Lubbers and President Daniels said about people making good choices. It's about making choices that enable careers and then doing some analytics. But we have to educate families on how to do that. And that's one of the problems. I've heard from someone recently whose friend graduated with $100,000 in debt from a private institution and a bachelor's degree. And I don't quite understand how that's happened, because that's not necessary at a Franklin College. And that family has made some decisions that are then reflecting badly on the education system, I'm afraid.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about challenges facing higher education. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi. William, you're on the line.
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
How's it going? Well, I'm a college freshman currently at IU, and so what I was wondering is, you guys were talking about how different AP credits and the disparity between students that take these classes and then moving on into college. And my high school actually had, I went to Delta High School in Muncie, we've actually phased out different AP programs in favor of like dual credit programs. And then a lot of my friends, as well as I, were able to enter college almost in like a sophomore status, since we had all of like the introductory courses out of the way. And just if you guys were looking into that in the future and like funding that as opposed to the College Board's program, because really the College Board AP classes that I took like junior year and stuff, because I transferred high schools, they just weren't that great.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, William. I'll throw that one to Commissioner Lubbers first.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Well, we have a wide range of both AP and dual credit in Indiana, and I think what's important is that we make sure that students understand in the area of AP that you can only be assured of having those credits accepted if you get a 4 and a 5. A 3 will be marginal at some campuses. Some will accept them and some won't. At least they'll accept them, not necessarily in your major. Dual credit, I think we're following dual credit. We've had a lot of dual credit in Indiana, and it is saving students time and money. We need to make sure that we ensure academic rigor, and the way we do that is to watch how those students do in the next course that they take after the dual credit course. And as a part of our college readiness reports, we're following dual credit students and AP students to see how they do in college, and we'll be making that information available. I think it's promising, but we need to make sure that academic rigor is always preserved.
President Minor.
William, thank you for your great question. I'm very much in favor of the dual credit system, but it really does involve high school and university college partnerships. In other words, we have to be conscious of working together to establish those curricula and look at the way they're being taught. But I think it's a great program, and it provides wonderful, wonderful contributions to student success.
Let me play devil's advocate here, though. And most of the time I try to pretend that I'm not a college professor when I'm doing this, but in this case, because the subject is close to the other parts of my professional life, I have had students who come through with either advanced placement or dual credit, and intellectually, you know, they're ready to take on the world. But I think President Minor alluded to this a little earlier. There is that emotional maturity process that goes on over the 4 years. Is there any concern that at times we might be pushing people out too soon into the marketplace, that maturation process isn't completed? You're looking like you want to answer, President Daniels. So,
well, I was only smiling because I it probably happens. Certainly, it must happen in isolated cases. I'm much more worried about the other problem.
Mm-hmm.
I still am astonished that, you know, we call on-time graduation in America 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
If I'd have said to my dad, Dad, I got a good idea. I'd like to stick around college for a fifth year, forget six, you know. And I was working jobs, and I had scholarships too. But, you know, he'd have said, that's fine, but you're paying for it. You know, it's a whole new world. And so I'm much more fixed on the need to move students through. I think for every student who is somehow disadvantaged because they enter the productive world at 21, I guess, instead of 22, there are many more who would have benefited all their lives from getting their career started a year or two sooner because they finished truly on time.
Commissioner Lubbers.
Well, that extra year of college comes with a price tag of about $50,000. So there's a reason why we want to encourage people to graduate on time, and we pay for what we value in Indiana in our performance funding formula, and on-time completion is one of those metrics, not the only. And if students can accelerate their time to completion, I think that's a personal decision that comes with the ramifications of that. Some people have the liberty of having, you know, families that say, you know, this is a time in which you sort of learn and explore. That is not the reality for most Hoosier students. I mentioned, you know, when we were off air for just a moment, it's wonderful when students have the opportunity to be a part of a residential setting. They're still the most likely to be successful. So nothing I would ever say would discourage that. We just need to acknowledge the different ways that people enter higher education and access higher education.
John, can I just mention one other thing?
Sure.
Because it's not very widely understood. You know, Indiana is a program, we may be the only state that does, that says to high school students, if you accelerate in high school and finish, as many, many can, your required credits in 11 years will give you the money we were going to spend while you cruise through senior year, as long as you take it to higher ed somewhere. And I've met now a large number of students who have done that. Mm-hmm. And boy, are they ready. And they will be, even if they spend 4 years. They'll be out a year sooner. I think they'll be very prepared for life, and they'll have saved a lot of money on the way.
President Minor.
This isn't just competency. This is performance. This is about performance, and it's about institutional performance, too. I've got to put a plug in here for the privates because our four-year completion rates, the privates in Indiana, are about 58% compared to 28% at the publics. We've got something going that's really advantageous to people coming through our system. And as the commissioner points out, the difference in cost between four and five might be $50,000. The difference between 4 years at a private and 6 years at a public is about $120,000, including opportunity cost. So, again, families really need to look at their range of opportunities and options and make some careful decisions.
We are talking about higher education here on No Limits. Dave, welcome to the program.
Yes, I had a question about what I was thinking is that when people go to schools like Purdue, they basically pay the same tuition no matter what degree they're seeking, except for maybe a few fees for lab fees, things like that. But I think they should look at a tuition rate that's based more on the market value of the degree that the person is seeking than just having a straight tuition fee for everybody, no matter what degree they're getting. Because in that way, the kid that's getting the degree that's worth less is subsidizing the kid that's getting the more market value type degree. And that way, I guess there wouldn't be as many kids coming out with a large amount of debt with a degree that's worth less in the marketplace if they didn't have to pay as much for that degree. So I just wanted to look at it that way, see if anybody's thought about trying that method.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Dave. And I guess I'll ask either of our two presidents here, who wants to preside over that faculty meeting?
President Daniels is nodding to me. Well, at places like Franklin, quite honestly, no, because one of the things that we know is that our students will graduate and have seven careers in their lifetimes. And and so pricing for which career, pricing for which degree, we offer essentially one degree. It's a Bachelor of Arts degree. We're a liberal arts college. I have worked in more complex institutional environments where something like that happens or there is a trend toward that. But I really should let President Daniels.
No, Dave's got a great question. It does probably apply much more to a school like ours than to President Minor's. People are talking about that. It is true that to a limited extent, we do charge. There are a couple surcharges for certain of our more complex disciplines. A slight alternative to trying to price this to some projected future income is to look at what it costs. It costs a whole lot more to train certain to teach certain subjects than others. And at some stage, we might want to look at that as an alternative, that could get you to differential pricing. But I would say, Dave, in terms of cross subsidies, that's a little harder to figure out. I could also argue that the student studying aeronautical engineering is working awfully hard for that degree, and shouldn't be necessarily charged more than someone who is pursuing something that's a little less rigorous.
How much of this? We've only got about a minute, so I'm going to toss the question out. We'll pick it up on the other side of the break. But how much of this is also the fact that we have greatly sort of expanded the pool of people who go on to get higher, pursue higher education in the space of a couple of generations historically, that, you know, maybe 10% of the American population 50 years ago took the SAT or whatever to go on to college, and now that number is much, much higher, so the role has changed. We are talking about challenges facing higher education here in Indiana. My guests are former governor and Purdue University President Mitch Daniels, Franklin College President Thomas Minor, and Indiana Commissioner of Higher Education Teresa Lubbers. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about challenges facing higher education here in Indiana. My guests are former governor and Purdue University president Mitch Daniels, Franklin College president Thomas Miner, and Indiana Commissioner of Higher Education Teresa Lubbers. I asked just before we went to the break a question, a more global question about, you know, the fact that we are trying to educate at this level a greater portion of our population than we would have been doing even a couple of generations ago. Now, how has that changed sort of the pressures on institutions of higher learning and at some level the state's responsibility to support those institutions? I'll start with you, Commissioner Lubbers, but I'd like to hear everybody's thoughts.
The big game changer in this regard, I think, is the development of a true community college system in Indiana, which we didn't have until 2005. So at the same time that we were telling people that education beyond high school was more important than ever, we were refining the missions of our institutions to nudge students to the places where they were most likely to be successful. So you saw a lot of students who were first generation, you know, having the option to go any place if they were academically prepared. But you had the option of strong regional campuses if they were place-bound. You had a community college system. And so you saw huge enrollment increases for a period of time there. No doubt that, you know, I think when you look at the fact that we have a wider range of people accessing higher education now, it does bring into question again, you know, do we have more people who are academically prepared to do that work? And so we have to really address that at the same time, which I think we're working to do, but much work is still to be done.
President Miner.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of interesting issues here. So much of this is about workforce development and the advancement of the economy of Indiana. I've spent a lot of time with business leaders since I've been here. It's notable that about two-thirds of the future jobs anticipated in Indiana require a bachelor's degree or should have a bachelor's degree engaged with them. So we've really got to be focused on how do we generate more degrees. I agree with everything Commissioner Lubbers said. I'm concerned about the community college system here and their success rates. In other words, I am seeking points in our community college system, to be polite, where students are being generated who are prepared for Franklin College. And honestly, it's few and far between. But we're working with administrators in Ivy Tech to identify those opportunities for us. But then the business community is also very interested in the role of the higher ed system here as an importer of talent and as not as an exporter of talent. So how we find the balance and who are we attracting to our institutions from out of state and making sure that we're not just training people from in-state and then sending them to other places to work, too, so that there's a stimulus here locally as well.
President Daniels.
Not much to add. I mean, we have a whole lot more students going to college or aspiring to go to college. The average SAT score hasn't budged in decades. Mm-hmm. And so it shouldn't be a surprise to us that a lot of them get there and struggle. I think we're very lucky, as the commissioner pointed out, we have a tiered system in Indiana. And so if each student who wants to go on can find their way to the right place, I think there's plenty of grounds for hope, but we certainly needed a real community college, and we probably should do it much better than we do at our regionals, too.
We are talking about challenges facing higher ed here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Eric, welcome to the program.
Welcome to the program. Thank you for having me. I have to say, in the act of full disclosure, I am a Purdue online graduate student, and I've also been fortunate to be an adjunct faculty member at one of our publicly funded institutions in the state. The question I have is, at what point do the public and private institutions practice a little bit of corporate social responsibility and say, college might not be for everyone, there are plenty of career tracks out there that don't require a degree?
Thanks very much for the call and the question. I'll throw that one to Commissioner Lubbers.
I think that's a great question, and I think it starts with what we actually are including in the term college. And I'm quick to say that when we talk about the 60% goal in Indiana, that 60% of Hoosiers would have quality degrees or credentials beyond high school, we're talking obviously about associate degrees and bachelor's degrees, but we're also talking about certificates, especially certificates that are aligned to growing sectors in the economy and workforce credentials. So, you know, a student coming straight from high school and choosing to go into the world of work, if they have a high school diploma and a certificate or a credential of some sort, can in fact get an entry-level job that allows for advancement if they continue to stack those credentials. But the reality is that the economy has changed so much that a high school diploma alone, unless it actually has accompanying with it some other sort of training, means that your chances of living a life of poverty are pretty great.
Gotten an email question from a listener named Tamara, and if you'd like to reach out to us via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Tamara says, early in the program, your guest touched on college preparedness of Indiana students. How is the current overtesting of students at the high school level impacting the college preparedness being addressed? Do you feel standardized testing overtaking the real test that will prepare? Is overtaking the real tests that will prepare students for higher education? Thanks for your time.
This is a political football right now, as you look right in at the legislature and other folks as well, as we've had this discussion about what is the right test. I mean, should we use a nationally recognized test as a college readiness test? Some people talk about using an SAT or an ACT. Some people talk about, you know, redoing I-STEP. The important thing to me is not so much what the test is called, but is it a test that measures the skills and knowledge you need to have to move on to a career or college? And, you know, assessments matter. And so we're going to use assessments of some sort. You know, whether we've hit a tipping point with all the confusion around I-STEP right now, and we need a, you know, re-engineering right now of the way we talk about it, that may be true. But I don't think we can move away from honest assessments of what students know and can do.
President Daniels?
One of the problems with higher education has been no one's been keeping score. No one knew how to tell which diploma really reflected quality and which didn't. And that's changing because people are demanding to know. And this was the problem in K-12 before, where there's no accountability. I mean, I understand why people like it that way. Then no one can ever be held responsible for failure. So there needs to be testing. I'm sure it's been overdone from time to time. But you know, the world is going to measure these young people sooner or later. Mm-hmm. And it's only in their interest that we find out, you know, who can cut it and who can't, so we can help those who are struggling. And I'm deeply suspicious of those who – it's really a shoot-the-messenger attitude that says, you know, we ought to just somehow dispense with testing and assessment. As a matter of fact, we need more and more of it and smarter, and we need it in higher ed as well.
To be fair, since I'd referenced Jamie Marisotis earlier in the program, that was one of his points too, is that the competencies was a way of attempting to attach a value to the experience.
Marisotis is right about that, but yeah. I've got to add the small college bit here.
That's why you're here.
We need assessment, and assessment's really important. I agree with the commissioner about that. And I agree with President Daniels that we have to bring more appropriate assessment into higher ed, and with Marisotis on that. The issue, however, in the public school system isn't going to be solved with more testing. We need it, it's going to be solved with more support of teachers and the relationships that teachers have with students that lead to that kind of student success that will be indicated on the assessment.
And I want to in the pilot for this program years ago, I talked with Richard Longworth everyone knows Richard Longworth. And he argued a couple of things in his book. One, that there probably ought to be more collaboration among regional institutions, but also institutions of higher education, that, you know, in areas of specialization, it doesn't make sense to have three or four universities in one state being great at the same thing, and that there ought to be, and I'm sure he would not use this term, like a Garanimals approach there to pursuing your degree, that you would be able to sample what Purdue does best and possibly also what Franklin does best. Is there merit to that idea, Commissioner Lubbers?
If I understand the question correctly.
Yeah, the the technical terms like geranimals probably
yes,
threw you.
Is there a merit to being able to sort of taste at each of the institution the strength and have maybe create your own degree at the end of the day?
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting idea, and it certainly might be more doable in Indiana than some states where we actually do have those kinds of missions. I'm going to have to ask someone else.
Well, let me jump in and point out that the commissioner has been very strong, and her predecessors before her, about what we usually term mission differentiation, meaning that this large number, unusually large number of institutions we have in Indiana ought to try to stay out of each other's way, try not to have mm-hmm. too much duplication. You know, I'll just say and Dr. Miner has dwarfs my experience in this area. I've just got 3 years, but I will just say that there's always a lot of talk about collaboration, but these institutions are very territorial.
And very competitive with each other.
And competitive. And, you know, I think the commissioners, they have struggled, really, to keep people from creating redundant or overlapping programs.
Part of the beauty of higher education in Indiana is the richness of kinds of institutions that we've got mm-hmm. and the opportunities for choice that we create. And I agree with President Daniels about sort of niching, but in the private sector, especially among small privates, our niche is that, mm-hmm. partly is just our size and the kind of attention that we give, because we know that certain students are going to perform really well at Purdue and certain students are going to perform really well at Franklin because of the differences in the intellectual and delivery environments. And in fact, we have joint programs with Purdue mm-hmm. so that we'll take a student for 3 years at Franklin and give them the advantages of our opportunities on our campus and prepare them really well for that next step at Purdue. And we love that. So that kind of partnership and collaboration is key to the future.
And I want to veer back to this question of whether, you know, a new model of some sort. I think it was President Miner who mentioned earlier in the program at least a Franklin College graduate, presumably the numbers aren't that much different for a Purdue University graduate, is looking at around 7 career shifts during the course of a lifetime. We tend to think of culturally a college education as something you do when you're in your late teens and into your early 20s. And what we're seeing increasingly is that there are demands to be re-educate all the way through your life. Do we need to rethink sort of the mission based on the understanding that, the knowledge base is expanding so rapidly right now? President Daniels.
I think that's a very important question. We're absolutely talking about it. My own view is that if we could just fashion the right a menu, what we ought to be holding out to young people is you're not buying into 4 years of great education and then go have a great life. It's Purdue for life. And how can we remain attached? How can we offer continuing education but maybe other services to our graduates, help them make the connections that lead to the rest of those 7 careers that President Miner spoke about. I think we'd be short-sighted not to do that, and we're actively exploring it.
And John, I met with a group of prospective students this morning where we talked with them distinctly about that, about how their relationship with Franklin College lasts through their career lifetimes, and that the community itself, the Franklin College community, will help them shift through those changes.
We are talking about higher education here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, why don't you do what a listener named Randy has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Randy, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I've got 2 sons. One graduated from Purdue and one still going to Purdue Electrical Engineering Technologies. I've got no problem with the cost. It's the Parent Plus loans. You can't refinance them anymore.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. I think that one is directed to you.
Well, boiler up, Randy, first of all. Absolutely share that concern. Across the very confusing, I think overcomplicated layers of student financing options, the Parent Plus loans, I think, are the ones that maybe are the most suspect. And they do represent a very large percentage of the unpaid or outstanding debt. At Purdue, we are right now looking to see if an alternative can, or a new alternative, a new option can be created, one called the income share agreement, which the student doesn't take on debt, in which the risk shifts to someone who fronts the money. Maybe it replaces that parent plus loan. We think that's probably the first place you'll see it work. And instead, the student contracts to pay back a set and affordable percentage of their income over a period of time. We don't know if this will be an attractive option or not, but it has, we think, some possibilities to be added to the current menu. And if so, I think we would see it replacing Parent Plus maybe ahead of other options.
President Miner, a lot of these, and I've got a stack full of email questions that we're obviously not going to be able to get to, Facebook stuff, and a lot of them do deal with the question of cost of college. Are there creative ways that independent institutions can find to help finance the cost of pursuing a degree?
Well, philanthropy, of course, is one of the most important mechanisms in the private sector, always has been. Our sector was founded on a foundation of philanthropy. And I think that's so critically important for us to work hard on creating private giving opportunities that support students of the future. And quite honestly, I'm with President Daniels in the need to expand and restructure all the loan programs and find new opportunity in that. We have strong financial aid programs in the private sector, and that's one of the things that we're known for. We need to be more known for that. We also have to stand up and be proud of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And I would add we have to be proud of what we're doing for diverse populations. And, you know, diversity is something that hasn't come up here today, but having our campuses prepared for more and more diverse populations and making sure that we're providing opportunity for all of our populations in Indiana and nationwide.
And I want to pick up on that last point. We're getting tight on time, so I'm going to give you each about 20 seconds here. What do you see as the opportunity in front of your specific institution, the place where you can make an impact? I'll start with President Daniels.
Well, not to exclude all the other great things we're trying to do, but we are a STEM-based school. We're the third most, that's science, technology, engineering, math, concentrated in a nation that needs engineers, that needs scientists and technologists. And so we're doubling down, so to speak, on that. We're growing those colleges. We're going to contribute to this state and to the nation people who can lead the economy of tomorrow and produce its innovations.
President Miner.
Life sciences, communications, and journalism. Intimate delivery of undergraduate education that leads to careers and professions.
I think that is an appropriate last word. I would like to thank my guests, Purdue University President Mitch Daniels, Franklin College President Thomas Miner, and Indiana Commissioner of Higher Education Teresa Lubbers. I'd also like to thank all of our listeners for all of the great questions. I apologize that we could not get to all of them. We will talk about this again. I am John Krall. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.